This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio
Free
Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
At any one time, there are 59 billion animals alive who are farmed for their meat, and almost two-thirds of the globe's agricultural land is used for beef production, from growing grain to raising cows. Since the early 20th century, industrial farming and global capitalism have worked hand in hand to provide meat at an ever cheaper price. But cheap meat comes at a price. In the treatment of animals, the effects on our atmosphere, and the degraded quality of meat sold at big supermarket chains. A recent UN panel's report says our production of meat is as damaging as our production and consumption of fossil fuels. A new book called Planet Carnivore takes a short, sharp look at this problem and what we can do about it. Alex Renton is an award-winning journalist specializing in poverty and development and in food culture and food policy around the world. He wrote Planet Carnivore, and he joins me from Scotland. Hello, Alex.
Hi there. Good morning.
First of all, how much meat do we consume across this planet? Not only the rich countries like the U.S., but also emerging meat-consuming countries like India and China.
Well, it varies enormously. I mean, extraordinarily, actually. The greatest meat eaters of all, who are the Australians and people in the United States, are responsible for about 120 kilos of animal carcass per year. In Western Europe, where I live, it's more like around 80 kilos. And if you go down to the poorest countries, it gets down to, you know, less than 5 kilos. But in the emerging democracies, which are probably the most interesting if we start thinking about the future of the planet, it's China, which, you know, meat eating has quadrupled there in the last 20 years, and it's now up to about 40 kilos a year. India is still quite low because of a lot of cultural vegetarianism there anyway. But the key problem that is now apparent is that as people get richer, most people on the planet eat more meat, much more. And that's a sort of, you know, it's a universal truth. So that's the reason why people like the United Nations are particularly worried as population and wealth increases during this century, because that many more people will demand that much more meat. And so huge is, say, the rise of wealth in China and the population there, that within 10 years or so, the Chinese demand for meat will equal the whole of the rest of the world's, which is beginning to be quite scary.
Now, you also begin your book by talking about a recent scandal in the United Kingdom involving cheap meat, which you refer to as Horsegate. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, it was named Horsegate, which is sort of standard newspaper joke here, but it's how we all came to know it. I mean, it's a Europe-wide scandal, really, and what happened was that the Irish Food Standards Agency did some DNA testing of cheap beef or so-called beef products and found out that burgers sold in some of our major supermarket chains and indeed other ready meals were up to 25 or 28% horse meat. That sort of obviously shocked a lot of people. But I think what it revealed was that so cheap are the cheap meat products now that it's almost impossible to produce them in a healthy or even in an honest way. The supply problems are just, and the supply chain is just stretched so tight. And what had actually happened, it turned out, was that a lot of horses in Eastern Europe and donkeys were being slaughtered because of a new ruling in Romania about donkey carts on main roads, and those just got straight into a long and convoluted supply chain. But I think what that scandal woke a lot of people up in Western Europe to what was going on in cheap manufactured meat products, and opened all our eyes to the fact that cheap meat and industrially produced meat carry an awful burden of potential health damage and cruelty to animals and the sort of problems that we saw through the Horsegate scandal.
So the horse meat basically was coming from Eastern Europe and finding its way into the production of meat throughout all of Europe.
Yes, I mean, it's pretty wide-ranging, and then actually, as several countries dug deeper and started doing, well, simple DNA tests on cheap meat products, more and more turned out not to be what they said on the label. I mean, quite a lot of pork was getting into beef as well, which obviously had some implications, particularly for people who don't eat pork for cultural reasons, religious reasons. But most remarkable of all, a beef burger turned up in Iceland that had no beef in it whatsoever. In fact, it had no meat in it whatsoever. It was entirely made from vegetable matter. But I think, you know, it just showed us that, you know, there is a supply chain that stretches across the whole world. I mean, a lot of chicken that you eat, I'm sure, in Vancouver, and we eat in Europe, is sourced in Thailand, and that regulation and inspection of these things are pretty shabby or not very thoroughgoing.
Now, you see this pattern, the meat industry scandal and the reaction to it as a pattern that seems to be happening every few years. What are the systemic factors that make these scandals recur so readily?
Well, I think, it just comes down to cost and the fact that, I mean, in most of the richer parts of the world, we're paying less. Food may seem very expensive, but we're actually paying less for it as a proportion of household income than at any time in history. In the US and in Britain, that's down to about 9 or 10% of income, and that's happened. You know, in many ways, that's been a good thing. I mean, and certainly, you know, some of the diseases of malnutrition we no longer see. But what's also happened is it means that money has been squeezed out of the agricultural system to go largely into the profits of the big food manufacturers or the retailers. And so, as I said before, it's become less and less feasible to produce decent meat at those prices. So what we've seen with industrialization is a demand for more meat, but at a lower price, which in the end means that it can only be farmed in industrialized ways and in ways that are very unnatural. It can only be farmed with enormous inputs of chemicals and antibiotics and pesticides and so on, and indeed with, you know, by farming animals in intensive conditions that certainly impinge on their welfare and you might well call cruel. I mean, that's a sort of long history that's been going on really for 100 years, but I think we've sort of reached a point now where the cheap meat problem, and it is becoming so severe and so regular are these scandals that are in the supply chain that we see, that we have to question really whether we should be doing it at all. I mean, we haven't even got into the problems of excessive meat consumption for human health.
Now, you do also acknowledge in your book that there are benefits that humans have gained from eating meat. What did you discover about why it is that there are such deep-seated pleasure across many cultures?
Well, I think that's very interesting. I mean, clearly, meat eating and meat cooking is a core communal activity, and it has been since the dawn of history. I mean, cooking meat in a group, and indeed hunting down animals in a group is more economic and easy thing to do, and from that comes the organization and indeed the pleasures of communal eating and the pleasures of working alongside people. And then, you know, like any other protein seeking omnivore, and that goes for flies and mice and chimpanzees too, we will, when faced with an unlimited supply of meat, just eat it and go on eating it until we're full up and making ourselves ill. So this sort of quite natural desire to find meat, because not least because when we were hunter-gatherers and at the beginnings of civilization, it was a cheap and easy way of getting the proteins and fats we needed. It comes together with a sort of what looks like a hardwired desire to, you know, and capacity to eat as much as we can possibly get when it's available. And of course, what industrialization has done is make meat super available. I mean, more available and at a cheaper price, as I said, than at any time in history. And we as human beings don't appear to have the capacity to control our appetites in a way that's either healthy for us or for the planet.
What questions does the production of cheap meat raise about our moral duties to animals and also to other humans?
Well, as a journalist, and I should say, a meat eater, which is something which I've eaten meat all my life, but I'm certainly eating less of it now than ever before. I've seen industrial production of animals close up, much closer up than most people can, because industrial animal farming is a pretty secretive business. Because once you get your head inside those chicken factory farms or inside a sort of fast-moving abattoir, what you see is pretty off-putting and pretty disgusting. But I mean, most meat consumers know this. I mean, and they know that to get bacon cheap involves keeping a pig in a way, and a pig is an animal which is very sensitive, and a human being can easily empathize with it. Keeping a pig in a way which is very far from natural and quite possibly cruel. But I think I knew all this, and as many guilty meat eaters know, that wasn't enough to stop me or to stop me continuing with the habit. The guilt doesn't overlay the desire for meat, but what I've found out now, which really has given me pause as a meat eater, is what industrial farming is planning for the future. And I think the promise of genetic modification to animals in order, yet again to seek more profit and to make the whole business cheaper, is absolutely horrific. And that involves, and the tests and work are already going on in laboratories, actually removing the capacity for suffering from animals entirely. So you essentially turn animals into machines, into meat-producing machines, and things that we would no longer empathize with. Now, of course, some animal rights people are in favor of that, but for me, that's a point at which human beings will have gone far too far in altering the world in search of profit and pleasure.
Indeed, yeah, it does sound rather horrifying, actually. But aside from the moral questions, what impact does meat production industry have on the climate?
Well, meat, we just had new figures the other day with the new Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report. So meat's now being, meat production and the whole process right through to delivery to the retailer is now being said to be responsible for around 14% of entire greenhouse gas production. So, and if you put that, so that's slightly less than transport, which I think runs at about 19%. So it's a very significant part of the long-term damage we're doing to the planet, and indeed the damage which is going to make food production in the future more problematic.
Now, you also propose in your book a hypothetical body called the World Food Organization. What could such a body do to address the global problems of meat production?
Well, I do that slightly wryly because, of course, we don't have a World Food Organization. Mm-hmm. But one of the things in my research I was struck by is just how many people do have ideas for sorting out the future of the world and the future of and the problem of feeding the 9 billion people who will be on the planet in 2050, and doing it in a way which is less harmful to the climate and to the environment and less unfair in its use of resources, and those plans make an awful lot of sense, and I suppose the one that I outlined there, which comes a lot from the work of a Canadian agronomist called Václav Smil, who works at the University of Manitoba, who's a very brilliant man. Manitoba. He would essentially limit our meat production to something slightly less than it is at the moment, far less than the projection for 2050, and would involve us no longer feeding grain crops that human beings could eat to animals, which is clearly a ridiculous waste of resources. And it's feasible. I mean, you can see how it would work, and what it would do is leave us not as compulsory vegetarians, but people who eat less meat, eat better meat, and prize it and enjoy it probably more than we do at the moment.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us this morning, Alex.
Thank you, Jim. Nice to talk to you.
I've been speaking with Alex Renton. He's an award-winning journalist specializing in poverty and development and in food culture and food policy. He wrote Planet Carnivore, published by The Guardian, as a Guardian short. It costs under $3 and is available online through a number of outlets, as well as at guardianshorts.co.uk.